your clock strikes. Here, it's always Halloween. And I'm always your haunted host, Luce Tomlin Brenner. Welcome to Small Frights Friday. On our Small Frights episodes, I like to share a curated selection of calls from our All Hallows hotline and letters from our eek mailbag. So let's kick things off with our first caller.
That's just great. Hi, I was just listening to a past episode. I've been a little behind on the podcast. Again, fantastic. I love it. Keeps us thinking and thrilled out here on the road. So very much appreciate it. You were discussing the story of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein and the creature. And I wanted to add there's a newer author out that has a series, actually, based on the original Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but takes it in a new direction. It's by Dean Koontz, and it's Frankenstein is the name of the series. I believe there are four or five books in it, and I've read them a few times. They're absolutely fantastic. I love the direction that he takes the characters. They were supposed to be made into movies. I don't believe it ever happened. I think one of them was made for TV, but kind of fell apart. But for any peoples out there that are interested in a new take from a classic book, I strongly recommend it. Again, Dean Koontz, Frankenstein series. Thanks for all you do. Again, we appreciate you. Take care.
Wow, thank you so much for that book recommendation. You know, I've never actually dug into Dean Koontz. I'm a hardcore Stephen King fan. Not that you have to pick just one modern horror author. I mean, I do also like R.L. Stein, but let's put that aside for now and talk about Dean Koontz's Frankenstein. So I'm delighted that you brought this up. Frankenstein has turned into a huge discussion on the podcast, inadvertently. So many people are passionate about the creature and Victor Frankenstein, the book, and the various different iterations of him throughout popular culture. So I'll have to dig into this a little bit more for a future episode. But for these books, I was excited to look this up and learn about them since I never heard of them before. So according to Wikipedia, there are five books, and the series is a modern updating of the mythology of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but it's set in present-day New Orleans, and the series follows the activities of Victor Frankenstein, who's now known as Victor Helios, as he continues to create new life forms for his own purposes. Opposed to his activities are a pair of homicide detectives, naturally, and Frankenstein's original creature, now known by the very cool name Deucalion. I bet he's picking up all kinds of brides with that name. I'm Deucalion. So the original monster, as we know, creature, was made with parts from dead humans, but Victor Frankenstein in this series is now using modern technology to create more creatures, particularly synthetic biology. This new race he's making is constructed and designed from the bottom up and can be seen as bioandroids, artificial humans made of flesh. Their knowledge and behavior is even based on programs downloaded directly into their brain, which appears to be an advanced wetware computer. So that's fascinating because now it seems like Dean Koontz is combining horror elements with sci-fi and cyberpunk, which is definitely a genre that I am fascinated by as well. So that mashup definitely has piqued my interest. So I appreciate you letting us know about it. I'd love to hear from anyone else, any other Dean Koontz fans. Maybe we need to have like a head-to-head episode where I argue for the supremacy of Stephen King, and someone argues for the supremacy of Dean Koontz, and someone else for Clive Barker and H.P. Lovecraft. There's room for all of us, really, but I would love to hear from experts on other authors, because as much as I love horror and all of the trappings associated with Halloween, there's a ton of horror authors, modern ones, that I'm just not following. I'm so into older stuff that I have missed some of the coolest stuff that's out there currently. So as far as horror, modern horror authors, it's like Stephen King, and then I love Grady Hendrix. I highly recommend My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is my favorite horror book I think I've ever read. So recommendation for recommendation. Thank you so much, caller. And I'm fascinated. You say that you're on the road. So are you a long-haul trucker? Are you on a road trip? Are you an RV person, an Airstream person? I'm fascinated, and I'm so happy that I can keep you company out there while you're driving around. All right, let's take our next call.
Hey, Lucy, it's Shanti of the Spooky Girl Gang, or Spooky Ghoul Gang. I'm calling in from Oakland, California. Very rainy morning here, so cozy. So great to have you back on the air, so to speak. And I'm so excited for the upcoming episode with your mom talking about our favorite creature. I can't wait to hear her thoughts on Frankenstein and his creature and being called monster and all that. I'm curious if you, your mom, or any of the listeners are familiar with the San Francisco Ballet's performance of Frankenstein. This was a few years ago. I want to say in 2018, but that timeline could be incorrect. And it's well known as a ballet for being unique in that it has a duet with two male dancers, and it's just so beautiful, and is the whole story of Frankenstein and his creature told through ballet. It's lovely. Okay, the real reason I'm calling, though, is to share a Halloween story from my childhood. I'll try to keep it short because I'm already talking for so long now. When I was a little kid, like I want to say maybe 5 or 6 years old, so this would have been like mid-90s, my parents had a Halloween party in LA suburbs, and my mom was very concerned with wanting to have like the most fabulous party and impressing, you know, all the other funky moms of that community that we were all part of. And she made candy apples from scratch. What she didn't realize is that part of the recipe, I think, had faded, or there was like a smudge mark or something. And where it should have said half a cup, 1/2 of corn syrup, with the way that the recipe had been smudged or faded, whatever it was that happened, it looked like 12 cups of corn syrup. And so she made these candy apples that were beautiful and shiny and so incredibly glossy. I remember seeing them as a kid, little kid, and all of us children all excited to have these candy apples, and we bite into them, and all of us had our teeth stuck in the candy apples because the corn syrup was so hardened on those apples that the parents, my mom and dad, had to like boil water, like put hot boiling water in all of our little mouths as children to get the apples, to get our teeth out from the apples. And my mom was just mortified by this. And, you know, very long story short, it wasn't a great hit off with the other parents that this happened. And I don't remember having other Halloween parties beyond that. When I talked to my mom about this story last, I should have asked her if that's why we didn't have other Halloween parties and just stuck to Christmas caroling parties after all of that. But I also realized when I was asking her about the story that I have this really intense fear, like this pain memory in my teeth about eating apples. And I never thought about that connection. I just always make a point of cutting up my apples instead of eating them. And then once I talked with my mom about this story, something clicked of like, oh, I'm afraid of my teeth getting stuck in the apples. That's why I never want to bite into them. And so now I've just been eating apples as their whole form instead of cutting them up into pieces. I released that little bit of childhood trauma, you know, very, very little tea trauma on that. And I just thought I'd share that little piece of family history and lore of 90s hilarity. And another just fun note is that for that Halloween party, my mom made my sister and I matching Flintstones costumes. We both had like white bones in our hair and like felt white dresses. I'll try to see if I can get maybe some photos from her of those costumes that she made. Okay, thanks so much. So happy to be listening to the show again.
Shanti, my goodness gracious, girl. What an incredible memory that is. Thank you so much. First of all, Shanti sent me 3 pictures, and they brought up such intense Halloween memories for me. They capture such a specific time of like 90s Halloween and like parents who are just making it all DIY and nothing is... Everything looks so polished now, I guess, because we really, you know, live on the internet and we project so much of our lives for the public to see, and we want them to be accurate and beautiful and tidy and just so. But I really got such a warm feeling looking at the pictures you sent, thinking about how you used to make things just for the people who were coming. And the pictures were a nice way to remember it, but it wasn't like about the pictures. Listen, real quick, I'm not trying to be like the oldest person in the world who's like lamenting before the internet. The internet is a good thing. The internet is the reason that we all know each other now. I love the internet. I love social media just fine. But I think that there's something sweet about looking at pictures from our childhood, if you had a childhood before social media, and just seeing the way that you and your friends and your family did things just for you. And I think that there's something that we can learn from that with our celebrations as well, that they don't all need to be worthy of thousands of eyes, because when you make something for other people, you make it with love, and that's good enough. Wow, this got so sentimental. Shanti, you are always bringing this out in me. Wasn't your call also the one that made me cry about my grandma? I feel like it was. Maybe not, though. This story is so funny. I think it's so fascinating that you discovered that you had harbored this internal fear of apples and you linked it to this experience. I'm so curious to know if other listeners out there have any low-key bummer experiences like that from Halloween, like a lasting memory that didn't leave you seriously damaged, but maybe was just like, oh, nuts. And I'm so happy that you can eat apples now. You made me think about, sorry, your sweet mom. I love, you do such a good job of describing the apples and how glossy they are and how beautiful candy apples are. Oh my God. And just having that strong memory from childhood. That's reminds me of cupcakes at our local convenience store that used to have like the most beautiful orange frosting swirled on the top and like a little candy ghost or bat perched right at the top. And they were in those clear plastic containers and they were all stacked and they had like a sticker that said like fresh on it. And just how Halloween-y those felt and so decadent. We didn't ever really buy things like that when I was a kid, and it just looked so decadent. Just those visual memories from childhood of sweets and fancy foods and holiday foods. It's just such a lovely, again, a comforting, sweet memory. But I do want to hear, I want to hear about other people's charming memories of food from childhood, Halloween, which we have talked about before, but I would really love to hear about any Halloween mishaps. I think this is our first mishap call, Shanti. So thank you. So you made me remember one of my Halloween mishaps, which was in fourth grade. I was like a car hop, you know, like the drive-in burger joint in the 50s, because I grew up like doing regionally professional roller skating where I'm really sharing this large secret with everyone, but I competed regionally in roller skating tournaments, routines, you know, like ice skating on the Olympics. Ice skating is a huge deal. They do the same thing for roller skating. They just don't make as big of a deal out of it, unfortunately. So I had the spandex and I had the, you know, the hair slicked back and everything and the routine with the music. Anyways, I loved skating, so I had a pair of skates and I wanted to incorporate the skates into my Halloween costume. So my mom was like, oh yeah, 1950s car hop. So I had this really cute skirt covered in stars and she made me a shirt out of puff paint. She wrote the Starlight Diner and did these matching puff paint stars all over the top that went with the skirt, which we had gotten from like TJ Maxx or something. And I had my skates and they did my hair up and wore a bunch of makeup and had my mom's friend or somebody that she knew had worked at McDonald's, and they gave me a bunch of like clean containers that we glued to a plastic tray so that it looked like, you know, I was holding the food tray. And so it was going great. I even got nominated at my elementary school for having like one of the best costumes. Trick-or-treating was so fun. I went trick-or-treating with my skates on. It was going great until like right before I got home and I tripped on a huge crack and I went down and just spilled my entire jack-o'-lantern bucket of candy across the sidewalk and the grass. And it was devastating. And it was dark because it was trick-or-treating and we went at night in Ohio. And it just... I still don't know if I got all that candy. I was convinced that I must have left candy behind because I knew I had a bigger sack before the fall. It just seemed like I hadn't gotten it all. That was one of my saddest Halloween bummers, a low-key Halloween bummer. Didn't leave no lasting trauma. Like you said, I like little T trauma. I would love to hear from other listeners, though, about their low-key Halloween problems that may have come up. Thank you so much for sharing that memory, Shanti, and I am going to share your pictures on Instagram so everybody can get those warm, gooey 90s Halloween vibes. All right, our next caller is calling from the Midwest and is describing a very memorable Halloween experience when you live near the Great Lakes.
Hi there. I just wanted to tell you about a legendary Halloween in Minnesota. The Halloween blizzard in 1991, it poured snow while we were trick-or-treating on Halloween night. It snowed so much that, school got canceled, but we trudged through the snow and trick-or-treated. And the thing about it is we never stopped talking about it. We never shut up about it. There's jokes and memes about how we always bring it up when people visit from out of state or if they move here, like people are always talking about it. People never stop talking about it. It's something that we all remember. And so I'll just say, oofta, we got a lot of snow, but Halloween was pretty sweet. Oop, I gotta go.
Wow, we even got an oop in there. What a perfect Midwest phone call. Thank you so much. I cannot believe you had a blizzard while you were trick-or-treating. Please send me pictures. I would love to see if you have them or friends of yours have them, of people in their Halloween costumes walking, trudging through the snow. You know, there's an old joke about how when you live in the Midwest, you always had to figure out a way to make your snowsuit fit in with your costume. And I never really thought about Halloween being anything but cold. It's naturally, it's almost winter. Of course, Halloween is cold. And I remember, as I got older, really resenting sexy Halloween costumes. Now, of course, I think anyone should dress however they like for Halloween, although I prefer if people err on the scary side, regardless of how sexual it is. But I remember just being like, why are girls wearing these skimpy costumes when it's like 30 degrees outside? that it was like absolutely insane. And like, how did sexy Halloween costumes get started? It's so freaking cold. Well, I moved to LA 9 years ago, and sure enough, not only is it not 30 degrees in LA at Halloween, it's hot. It's the I love living in Los Angeles. The absolute worst thing about it is hot Halloween. It's freaking cursed. Oh my goodness, it's 100 degrees practically the entire month. It's so hard to get into that autumnally feel. Autumnally? I believe I meant autumnal. Excuse my January brain. Anyways, it's so hot here that I decided that sexy Halloween must stem from Los Angeles, where it's so hot that you can wear lingerie as a costume and it doesn't matter. And then that somehow spread to the rest of the country so that people who are living in northern states are chattering their way, prancing across town in itty bitty Little Red Riding Hood costumes and Little Bo Peep costumes and Sexy Cat in the Hat costume, which I saw a few years ago and I just think is wrong. Anyways, caller, thank you so much for that call. And I would love to see some trick-or-treating in snowstorms. If you or anyone else listening has those pictures, send them my way. I'll post them on the gram. And that was our last call for the day, but I do have an eek mail. So let's pop on over to the eek mail bag and see what's lurking there for us. Okay, this eek mail is titled Missed Halloweens. I have an old Halloween story for you from my childhood. I love Halloween now, partly because I have so much missed fun to make up for from my childhood. My parents thought Halloween was satanic, so I was sheltered from its very existence until elementary school, where I learned about it from other kids. Costumes and candy and spooky decorations, it sounded like the greatest thing ever to me, but my parents wouldn't let me go out on Halloween. They didn't even answer the door for trick-or-treaters either. When I turned 13, there was one Halloween event that they would let me go to, and I wish it had been a trunk-or-treat. Our church had a very different event specifically advertised to parents as an alternative to Halloween. At sunset on October 31st, they would screen the movie The Exorcist, followed by a lecture from the priest about how if you didn't behave, this would happen to you. I have been happily misbehaving by enjoying Halloween my entire adult life and no possession yet. And when my daughter was born, I dressed her up and took her trick-or-treating before she was even fully a year old. She'll never miss a year of Halloween fun on my watch. Your loyal Luceo Lantern, Thomas. Oh, Thomas, my eyes just welled up with tears. What a great dad you are. And I'm so sorry that you missed out on Halloween as a kid. And I'm sorry for giggling, but my goodness, churches can be so unhinged. Like, I'm sorry, The Exorcist is such pure fiction. No matter what you believe in, The Exorcist is fiction. So whether or not people can be possessed by demons, I personally am falling on the seems a little too supernatural to be true, but also who knows? There's a lot to dig into. I don't think we're going to solve it tonight. recently got a 1-star review from someone on Apple Podcasts that said, eye roll, I would enjoy it if she would drop the liberal talking points. So maybe I shouldn't go into how I think the Catholic Church uses people with mental illness to further their message of exorcism and demons. Anyhoozle, I didn't say that. Thomas, I loved this email so much, and I'm so happy that you're turning things around and bringing Halloween into the next generation and giving your daughter everything that you wish that you got to have. And in doing that, you kind of get to re-explore Halloween to your childhood self. You know, you get to be with your daughter and see it through her eyes. And that really supports little Thomas also. So I'm excited for you and everything that you'll get to do with your daughter. And I am happy that you have not been possessed yet. And I can't tell you how thrilled I am that Luceo Lanterns is catching on. I've had a couple people use it on Instagram. And I also just got another email from Becky who said, I checked Insta, I didn't see the survey, but I vote for Luceo Lanterns. As soon as I heard it, it just sounded right. Becky, thank you so much. And you're right. I need to come clean. I said that I was going to post a survey for new names and I didn't do it. Did I get possessed? Maybe. Too much candy? A hurt tummy? Perhaps. Who knows what Halloween mishaps befell me that day so that I lapsed on getting the survey out. I need you to know I am committed to us having a fun listener name. So I'm recording this on a Wednesday and I am projecting myself into the future and saying I'm gonna get that survey up this time because I don't feel comfortable just demanding you all call yourself Luceo Lanterns just because it does have my name in it. Do I love it? Yes. Yes, of course I love it. I love it deeply. But that's okay. It's not about me. It's about y'all and this community that we're building together through our love of Halloween and liberal talking points. I'm sorry. I need to let that go. There's nothing but lovely reviews up on Apple Podcasts. And I just got a little worked up about that one because this is not a political podcast. I don't talk about policy. I don't talk about who to vote for. I do talk about eradicating racism and sexism and classism because we've almost lost Halloween twice. The first time, if you go back to my early episodes, the ancient Romans tried to murder all of the Celts because they believed they were barbarians. A word that they used then that we still use now when we're describing cultures that are too different from our own. And when I say our own, I mean like, you know, white mainstream capitalist societies. That's a term that we've used to other people for thousands of years. And I find that fascinating and I find that telling. And if they would have succeeded in killing off the Celts for being barbaric, for using different language, different religion, dressing different and being overall uncivilized. That's how the Romans saw them. That's how you can read all of the many hateful things that the Romans said about the Celts. If they would have succeeded in killing off the Celts, we would have lost Halloween. We would have never had Halloween. Then again, in the mid 19th century, the Irish are coming here. And Victorian Americans hated them. The Irish were extremely hated. It was ethnocentric. It was classism. They thought they were basically like hillbillies, you know, yokels, uneducated, unrefined. And they thought Halloween was kind of gross. If you'll recall, again, this is something we've talked about on our past episodes about how they thought it was too raucous, too undignified. Throwing wagons up on rooftops was disgusting. And then the Victorians took it and they're like, what if this was a romantic holiday? What if we like kissed each other a bunch and like and melted lead into the shape of what our future husbands will do? That's Halloween now. So when I talk about oppression in relation to Halloween, it's not because I am pushing an agenda, I promise you. I mean, in a way I am. My agenda is tolerance and to remember that intolerance has almost lost us Halloween twice. So everything I talk about is directly related to my passion for Halloween and my passion for preserving Halloween. And I just want to challenge anybody who maybe feels a little bristled by hearing some of the terms that I've used to just think about it and think about how this is a history podcast. I'm committed to doing history as best as I can as a non-historian, as a comedian who's interested in history. I'm trying to interpret it as clearly as possible. And a lot of it's not my research, original research. It's all things that are based on historians and their actual research. So, yeah, I just needed to go off on that tangent. And I hope that that resonates with some of you guys. And I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody and recognize everybody who's been so supportive of the podcast. I'm not bothered by that comment, but I do. It did spur me into a lot of thinking about what I talk about, why I'm passionate about it, and why the things that I say are very important to the care and celebration of Halloween. Not everybody has to care this deeply or like this emphatically or get into this these points all the time. But as someone hosting a History of Halloween podcast, I do believe that that is my role. So thank you for going on this intellectual journey with me. That's also oftentimes very silly. I think that he was ignoring the silly parts. Okay, you're all the best. Thank you so much for leaving beautiful reviews on Apple Podcasts. And if you would like to leave a review, if you haven't yet and you're enjoying the podcast, it is a free and easy thing that you can do to boost us up. Leave a 5-star review on Apple or 4. If it has to be 4, it's fine. And say a little something about what you like about the podcast, and that'll help people find us. And if you just love the podcast and you want more and you want to get deeper into all aspects of Halloween, then subscribe on Patreon. It's patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween. I put out 2 beautifully read ghost stories a month with all original sound design by Pete Burns. And I also do 2 movie nights where I live stream a movie that the patrons vote on, and I discuss the history of the film, its connection to Halloween, and then we have an ongoing chat in the live stream as well. And that's become such a fun community. And I put all kinds of extra goodies and things up on there. So patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween. We are up to $150 a month, which is almost a third of what it costs to produce the podcast. So you guys are funding almost a third of the podcast. Absolutely incredible. One more donation at the $16.66 level would put us at a third, or a couple more donations at a lower level will boost us up there, which will be amazing. Can't wait for that. And I want to shout out all of our new January patrons. Thank you so much for helping us produce the show. Ruth McGinnis, Sarah Jahir, Shanti Bardot, Tony Dixon, Megan McPhee, and Mindy Rice. I apologize if I messed up any of your names. I love you and appreciate you deeply. Please feel free to call in and chide me, and I will make sure to say your names right next time. Another way you can support the podcast is by getting some merch on Redbubble. Check us out. You can just go to redbubble.com and search It's Always Halloween Podcast for original podcast art on every surface that you can imagine. I also put together a fun design that says, no matter what hour your clock strikes, it's always Halloween. So you can get a shirt or a notebook or a sticker or a pin with that phrase on it as well. So this has been another episode of It's Always Halloween, written and performed by me, Luce Tomlin-Brenner, and edited with original sound design and an original theme song by the incredible Pete Burns. Pete Burns, by the way, he just wrote a whole new album of music called In Parallels. It's his new album. Go check it out. I'm going to put it in the show notes, and I'm going to post about it on our Instagram. But you can follow Pete Burns at Mittenberries, and you can get his music from there. You can follow me at LTB Comedy and see what other silly things that I am up to in my life. And you can follow the podcast at It's Always Halloween Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today, and come back next time, unless you get your chompers stuck in a candy apple.